This is the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, part of the VSporto Network, bringing you all Noles all the time.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting rolled banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Lots of stuff to talk about. Spring game tomorrow for Florida State being played in Orlando. Lots of things have happened since we last recorded. Sort of let things build up as we've talked about during the spring. We're not just going to waste your time with a daily podcast when there's not as much to talk about. But there is plenty to talk about now. We're going to talk a few things that have happened since our last recording, and then we're also going to preview that spring game, give you a few things to look at. So let's go ahead and get right to it. First thing to talk about is that we were told earlier this week, found out on Wednesday, that Dalvin Cook had shoulder surgery, minor shoulder surgery, to clean up some stuff in the back of his shoulder that came up in pass protection, according to Jimbo Fisher. He sort of felt something not quite right, and they decided to go ahead and clean it up now so that he'll have the second half of the summer to be basically back to lifting, back to being ready to play going into the fall. So they feel like it's a minor thing, not going to really affect a whole lot. He should be able to train as need be elsewhere, and should be good to go, should be full speed going into the fall. But it does emphasize how important it is to be deep at that running back position. And that's something that they've really worked on all spring. That emphasizes yet again the importance of Jaquez Patrick, of Ryan Green, and hopefully if he can get back to health, Mario Pender. They need to have some depth at that running back position, because even if you have a Dalvin Cook or a Leonard Fournette or a Christian McCaffrey or that kind of player, the running back position is a high attrition position. You've just got to have numbers there. It's always been my view that if you're going to be a successful team, you have to have four quality running backs on your roster. So that's something definitely we're going to talk about a little bit later as something to look for, to look at during the Florida State spring game. One thing also that is worth mentioning on this, and I tweeted this out on Wednesday as well, it's amazing to me. It's remarkable to me that ESPN's video report on this was done by Primus Ripipat from the ESPN, usual ESPN online video host and all this, and with help from Jared Shanker, whose report was actually correct. But what is remarkable to me is that ESPN didn't get the headline right, because they were talking about, the headline was Dalvin Cook's upcoming shoulder surgery, a big deal. But of course, as Jimbo Fisher had said twice in his post practice interview that day, the shoulder surgery was not upcoming. It was already done. So that was wrong in the headline. So they couldn't even get the headline right. And that's an editor's problem there. Secondly, I found it just, I couldn't believe that the first 20 seconds of the video, the first segment of the video, talked about how Cook's focus this spring had been, coming into the spring, was rehabilitating his image after being charged with punching a woman last summer, which they conceded he had been cleared of. The jury, after he had been charged, had declared that he was not guilty of what he had been accused of punching this woman in the face. And yet, months later, we're told that Cook's focus was rehabilitating his image for something that he didn't do. It's just remarkable to me. So in a video that that's allegedly looking at basically what's going to happen with Dalvin Cook's shoulder, how much might this affect next year? Is that the focus at the beginning of the video? Well, of course not. No. The thing that needs to be focused on, apparently, is the allegations, which were shown to be false, that he had punched a woman. It's just remarkable to me. That's the sort of thing that really bothers me when someone is charged with something, and then a jury declares, no, this guy is not guilty in 22 minutes or whatever it was. This is just not, it's just, to me, it's borderline character assassination to bring that up as the thing that is really the focus this spring. I can tell you right now, that was not even close to Dalvin Cook's mind this spring. He was not considering this spring as the time to rehabilitate his image. He was looking at this spring as a chance to continue to get better and to help his team, particularly since he wasn't taking a ton of reps, to help his team get better. As far as he's concerned, his image was rehabilitated when the jury said, no, he didn't punch that woman. Amazing. Well, moving on, another piece of news that happened not too long ago was that Florida State picked up their quarterback commitment in this class. They definitely need a quarterback in the 2017 class. The quarterback situation that Florida State is in moving forward is a little thin, and they certainly do not want to end up in a circumstance like what they did in 2015. They can't afford to have a quarterback transfer or get hurt or whatever and wind up with needing basically a graduate transfer to come in from somewhere, which if you get a graduate transfer from somewhere, that means he didn't really fit where he was. He wasn't good enough to really be assured of playing championship football wherever he was, and that makes it tricky, plus having to learn the offense and everything in a short amount of time, as we saw. And that's the case anywhere. Or have basically a backup quality quarterback as the only guy left on the roster who can take that role. They can't afford to be there in the future. So they've got to continue to bring in these players. And with Bailey Hockman, they got a pretty darn good commitment. They got a kid that can really play. He's a lefty. He comes from a top high school in Powder Springs, Georgia. McAhern, I think is how they pronounce that. And he's the coach's son there. So those are huge pluses, not just because, we know that a quarterback who's a coach's son gets a chance to be around the game and gets a chance to understand what's going on and sort of be more of a film junkie from the time that that kid can talk. That's huge because the instincts that you build as a quarterback are already sort of built in, are ingrained at a very young age. This is a kid that's going to be able to see the field. It's a kid who's going to understand concepts, be able to interact with Jimbo Fisher's offense at a high level fairly early. But in addition, that high school is one of the best that has some of the best talent in the country. They've put out a few 5-stars over the last few years. They've been a major feeder program for Georgia and Tennessee and some of these others, putting out some top players. And this, now you're taking the coach's son and putting him at your program. That's also a really big boost in terms of potentially getting some other kids on your campus down the line. Now, that said, when you're bringing in a coach's son, and particularly from this kind of high school, it's possible that you're bringing in a kid that may be a little bit more maxed out. And there's no doubt that Bailey Hockman, looking at his junior tape, he's going to be more polished on arrival than most quarterbacks that Florida State's brought in recent years. He doesn't have a whole lot, he's not a raw kid. This is a kid that's been developed a little bit more than your average high school quarterback, even your average 4-star quarterback, which again, he's a 4-star, a consensus 4-star commitment. So he may be just a little bit more maxed out, may have a little bit less room to grow in terms of potential. But at the end of the day, you look at the junior tape and you see really good hand talent and touch. He can already change speeds. He's got good natural placement. Ball placement's good, and he's got good natural anticipation. Those are all things that you can build on, even if a guy has a little bit less room to grow, perhaps, which I'm not sure whether he does or doesn't. But that, that's one potential concern when you're bringing in a kid that's already had good coaching. He's got a lot of those things that you want to try to develop when he gets there. So that's not a negative. Moreover, as you look at the junior tape and some of his camp tape and that sort of thing, you can see that he does still have a good bit of growth left to deal with in terms of his footwork and some certain other things that can get a significant amount better. So there's still some ceiling, still some room to grow here. And the kid definitely has an FBS, a Power 5 starter arm. There's a championship starter arm. Actually, the kind of player he reminds me of is kind of an AJ McCarron. Maybe a little bit more physically talented than a McCarron, but very similar kind of player to what you see with an AJ McCarron. Which, bringing him in behind DeAndre Francois and Malik Henry, that's just about as good as you can expect. After having two studs on campus there, you can bring in this kid, who's also a kid that you can see starting at a place like Florida State with success and potentially winning championships, just like AJ McCarron did at Alabama. This is the kind of kid you can win with. So it's a very good commitment overall. He was the first offer that Jimbo Fisher made at the quarterback position. So that tells you sort of where they were on that. They're very pleased to have his commitment at this point, and he's already starting to work as a recruiter for the Florida State staff, which, you know, again, it helps to have a top quarterback committed in your class, because kids want to play with good quarterbacks, and those guys can turn out to be pretty good recruiters for you. So those are a couple of the things that we've had since the last time we recorded. The other thing that happened is the second scrimmage. Not really a whole lot of reports that came out of that one, other than that, you know, basically the quarterbacks continue to progress, but Jimbo is riding this team really hard. He's riding this team hard and demanding that they step up the intensity level, because he thinks this team can be special, but they can't be lackadaisical. He's trying to really push them to be consistently intense. Down after down, because last year's team simply wasn't, and even the 2014 team was not. And he's trying to build back to the kind of all business mentality that 2013 team had. And we talked about that in 2014. We talked about it a little bit last year, that 2013 team had so much leadership that those guys demanded that every play be life and death. And that team played so hard and so with so much intensity that they blew teams off the field. And that's what he's really hoping for in this team. And this team has the capacity, has the talent to become that kind of team. That said, also, we did hear that Auden Tate had a very good second scrimmage, making a few big plays. And there's some discussion right now among some of the rumblings have come out that Tate is perhaps the most difficult cover at this point already for the defensive backs, because of his size and because of his ability to use that size and to create mismatches and all that. That's a very good thing. And that's partly that's also a good thing in part because it's clear at this point in the spring that this group of defensive backs is going to be elite. There's some in the program who are talking about this being as good a defensive back group as they've ever had. Which, again, this is on the heels of the 2013 group, which is about as good as anybody's ever had, not just Florida State. And also, you know, going back, there's some pretty good groups in Florida State history. You go back to the, like, 80-89 group. Pretty good group. But there's some around the program who think that this group is at the end of the day going to be rivaling those kinds of groups in terms of what they're putting on the field at the defensive back position. One source tells me that with Lewis or McFadden opposite Marquez White, they think Florida State will be able to single cover pretty much any pair of wide receivers in the country. And that's with either Lewis or McFadden. They're both that good. And McFadden has been terrific. But one of my sources is saying Lewis might actually have been slightly better this fall or this spring. But they've both been so good and so dominant that either one gives you the opportunity to be locked down at that corner spot, which is just absolutely huge. It's amazing that you can lose a Jalen Ramsey, who is, I think, very, very possibly the best player in the NFL draft, and still be absolutely loaded at the spot that he vacated. And regardless of who wins that job, the other guy's going to need to be on the field somewhere. And that's why I think ultimately what we're most likely going to see McFadden wind up at that boundary spot, and then Lewis wind up doing a little bit more at the star position, maybe even at the free safety position. And the defensive backs have been cross training quite a bit. So Lewis has moved around a good bit. He's been at the star position. He's been at the free safety position a little bit. So they've been moving those guys around because they do want to get their best five, their best six on the field. And that best five or best six is going to be incredible because they're going to be able to put four or five cornerback quality coverage players on the field at once, which is what they were able to do in 2013. That's why that 2013 team was so difficult to beat in the secondary, because you couldn't get any matchup with a guy that couldn't cover. You couldn't say, okay, we're going to motion or formation it so that we can get a guy isolated with this particular player who can't cover like the others. They all could cover. When your safeties are Jalen Ramsey and Terrence Brooks, and Brooks could cover like a corner, basically, not quite like a top-level corner, but basically corner cover skills, those are your safeties. So you're going to try to get a matchup with Jalen? That's not going to work very well. That's basically but they may have a chance of being just like that in 2016, where you try to get a matchup with the free safety and you wind up getting a matchup with a guy like Lewis. Or you try to get a matchup in the slot and you're going up against a top line star who's not going to be easily lost, a guy who can cover like a corner at that position. So they feel very, very good about what they've got in the secondary. And the secondary has dominated the receivers just a little bit this spring, in part because they're just a little further along. But they're starting to feel pretty good about what they've got at the receiver position. They're just going to demand more because those guys need to put in a really good summer and continue to develop to be what they want them to be over the course of the 2016 season. And another good sign is, again, we talked about this last podcast, that George Campbell has also showed signs of coming along as well, putting in the kind of effort that he really didn't put in the fall, and has started to really show and develop as they've been hoping. And that's even without Pig Harrison, who's going to miss the spring game with a groin injury, but he's a guy that may have been, he was as good as anybody before this went out. So that's another big receiver that was playing very well before he went out for the spring. So something else that'll be something definitely to watch in the spring game. And actually, let's go ahead then and transition to five things really to watch in this spring game. And the first thing is obviously the quarterbacks. Now, a couple things to think about there. Keep in mind that the quarterbacks are, this is a setup where the quarterbacks should look pretty good. Now, the offensive line, because they're dividing this up, in case you weren't aware, they're not going first and second team here. What they did is they had a draft. They gave the seniors, they gave the seniors a chance to divide up and then draft the rest of the team. And what this does is, this is great for the coaches because they get to find out what the seniors think about the other players. Who are the best players according to the players who play against them every day? And this is really important for coaches to learn, to understand. It helps coaches to make good personnel choices. So what they did is they went into a draft situation where you draft a player and then you get that player and then the other team gets the backup. So it tells you where, ultimately what players think, where the players think the biggest gap is between different players more than anything else. But that means that you're not getting like the one offensive line that's worked together during the spring, working in unison, and the two offensive line likewise. You're getting a little bit of a random mix, which is a little bit more difficult. It means that the defensive line should have a little bit of an advantage at that, because offensive line takes so much more communication and unity there. So that makes it a little bit harder. But in terms of everything else, this is the kind of environment where it's set up for quarterbacks to look good. They're not getting hit. Now, it is worth noting one other thing that came out of that second scrimmage is that when Fisher was not happy with how the quarterbacks were playing, he made them live. He basically, even though they're still in the blue jersey, he made them, or green jersey, whatever it is, even though they're in the quarterback jersey, he basically said, "Nope, you guys can get hit now." Because he wanted to see how they would respond to that, particularly since he wasn't especially thrilled with how they played to that point. And actually, the quarterbacks played better once things went live, which is more encouraging than it is not. And it's interesting to see Fisher actually do that. But in this environment, he's certainly not going to expose the quarterbacks to contact. So they're going to have, you know, a little bit of a protective shell there in that regard. And they're not going to face a whole lot of exotic stuff. They're not going to show a lot of the stuff that they worked on defense all spring. We're going to be looking at very vanilla looks. So the quarterbacks and receivers will have a little bit of an advantage in that regard, not facing anything really sophisticated. So the quarterbacks should look good in this environment. That said, I'm very interested to see what basically DeAndre Francois and Malik Henry look like at the end of the spring. It's going to have a lot. It's going to say a lot about where things are going to be going into the fall. Because again, best case scenario for Florida State is that Sean McGuire does get beaten out by one of the young guys who has more talent for that 2016 role. But again, these guys have to perform. They have to go out and they have to take the job. You don't just give the job to a young guy. The young guy has to take it from the older guy. And that's going to be really interesting to see whether these guys are in the position to take the job, whether they've put themselves in that position by the end of the spring. And again, Jimbo's not going to say anything about the quarterback, who's the starting quarterback, until the end of the fall camp anyway. That's just his MO. He wants to make sure that these guys have to compete and nobody's given or awarded anything. He wants to make sure that whoever wins the job wins the job. But I want to see whether Francois or Henry can come out and do what Jameis Winston did in the spring of 2013 and sort of seize the job to some extent, even though Winston didn't really win that job until the end of fall. He kind of showed a little indication of what he was about in that 2013 game. When the lights came on, he showed that he was a big time player. That's obviously number one. You know, everybody's going to be watching that in the spring game. But other things to watch. I'm going to have my eye on the interior offensive line and defensive line. I'm very interested to see Wally Ime, who I've heard, you know, tremendous things about all spring. I want to see the center position, Eberle and Martinez. I want to see how they're holding up, whether it really is as concerning as what basically some indications have suggested. I want to see the depth at that defensive tackle position. And then on the outside of the defensive line and offensive line, I want to see those ends, and I want to see how the tackles look. I'm not worried about Rod Johnson, but I do want to see Rick Leonard. I want to see how he looks on the offensive side. I want to see Adam Torres, his replacement. I want to see how Torres looks at that defensive end spot behind DeMarcus Walker. So there's a lot to see there. I also want to see, this is number three. I'm going to be paying attention to the linebackers, particularly Matthew Thomas, who I think is one of the keys to this defense, not just being excellent, but being great. If Matthew Thomas plays like he's capable, this defense really doesn't have a weakness. There are still some concerns about the pass rush, whether or not they're going to get the pass rush to be what they want it to be, you know, whether they're going to be able to get Josh Sweat to create the pressure off the edge, Jacob Pugh, who's not going to play in this game, to create the pressure off the edge that he needs to, whether they're going to be able to get maybe a Brian Burns to add some situational pressure in third down packages, what they're going to be able to get off the edge, how much they're going to need to use Derwin James in those packages. That's still somewhat of a concern, but they should be okay. I still think they're going to be okay in terms of finding some outside pass rush, because I think I have a hard time thinking that Josh Sweat's not going to develop over the summer as he basically continues to get stronger on that knee and gets his explosion back. And that's the thing that's really lacking at this point. He's extremely strong and plays with great leverage. He just doesn't have the burst at this point that he had in high school before the knee injury, and he needs to get that back. I think that's going to start coming back over the course of the summer. He gets that back, that's not a concern. And then if Matthew Thomas plays like he's expected to, then this defense doesn't have a weakness. similar to the 2013 defense, which really didn't have a weakness. There was nothing you could target and say, okay, we're gonna go after that. I also want to see Josh Brown at that linebacker position and how he plays. He's a guy that, again, I expect to play almost starter-level minutes in 2016, despite the fact that he's an early enrollee freshman. But he's been that good. Fourth, I want to watch the wide receivers. Particularly, I'm going to have my eye on Tate and Campbell. Alden Tate and George Campbell are going to have... When I'm going back and rewatching it, I'm going to look at Alden Tate and George Campbell repeatedly. I'm going to watch every play there on the field because I want to see the consistency level in terms of route running and whether or not they're going to actually be the kind of contributors that they need to be in 2016. Because this team is really, on offense, a big receiver away from being really dangerous if one of those young quarterbacks can develop. And finally, the fifth thing that I'm going to be looking at there is going to be the running back position. And again, we opened the podcast with this, talking about the shoulder surgery for Dalvin Cook and the need for depth at that running back spot. First of all, to keep your star running back healthy by taking some carries and reps from him, particularly in games where you don't necessarily need to give him 20 carries or 30 carries. You know, if you can give him 10 or 12 carries against the lower level teams on your schedule, that's better. But the question has Florida State developed the necessary depth behind him to be able to do that? Is Jacquez Patrick going to run more consistently physical? Is he going to run behind his pads and run like a big back? I want to see that play in, play out in this spring game. And, you know, none of us have seen Ryan Green at the running back position in almost 2 years. I want to see whether Green is really a viable complement to the other pieces at that running back position. Is he going to be able to step in and take some meaningful reps away from a Dalvin Cook and be able to give a valuable contribution to be a guy who can take a few carries a game to help keep Dalvin Cook healthy? Or is he just basically at the position because they needed another body? Is he going to be good enough? So there's a lot to look at that position as well. Okay, final thing. There are going to be a lot of big-name visitors, recruiting visitors, at the spring game in Orlando. And of course, this being in Central Florida, this is kind of like a satellite camp in some regards for Florida State. Even though, you know, satellite camps as of today have been disallowed. This is that kind of thing where you go on the road, you get to take the program a little closer to some population centers, and Florida State's gotten a waiver to treat the Orlando facility sort of as an extension of campus, so they can have the normal interactions with players that they would have on a recruiting visit at Florida State. Now, of course, you can't show off your facilities. There's certain limitations that you have by being at a remote site. But this is potentially a really big event for Florida State in terms of recruiting. A lot of major players. In addition to a number of commits, they're going to have Kalon LeBourne there, running back from Virginia, formerly from Levante Taylor's high school. Was teammates with Levante Taylor last year. He's actually just transferred to Shelby High School in North Carolina. I believe he's following his coach down there. But I think he also has family in Shelby. If I remember right, he's actually a relative of Marquise Williams from University of North Carolina, the quarterback who is there, and now he's headed down to be there's some family there. He can transfer there, follow the coach, and then work his way down. But Kalon LeBourne is going to be there. Wide receiver Trevon Grimes, most likely going to wind up at Ohio State, but he's going to be there, 5-star guy. We're going to see one major player from the 2018 class, Patrick Surtain Jr. Surtain Jr. should probably be the top cornerback prospect in the 2018 class. As of right now, I think LSU leads, but there's a long way to go there. It's going to be interesting to see, again, whether Florida State's able to continue to pull the kind of defensive back talent they have in recent years. In addition, there's safety/linebacker prospect Hamsa Nasirildeen, Again, a North Carolina kid, 6'4 kid who projects as one of those sort of big safety prospects who could grow into maybe an outside linebacker, major, major player. A lot of players there. You can go to NoleDigest.com for the full list. But there's a lot of players that are going to be on the sideline for this spring game. The environment is not going to hurt. There's already been 40,000 tickets sold. This is a big deal for a team that's going to open its season in Orlando, and it's going to get these players are going to get the chance to see to get comfortable with the facility and get comfortable with a bigger atmosphere, which again is not going to hurt in terms of showing off for these recruits either. Well, that's going to do it again for us today. Before we get out of here, just a reminder, you can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Of course, Seminole Sports Radio at Seminoles Radio for the latest on FSU sports. Make sure to catch our next podcast, which is going to cover the spring game, looking at what we saw, spending some time on some of those five things that we're going to be paying extra special attention to in the spring game. Lots of stuff. There's going to be more than one podcast worth of content to talk about out of the spring game. But definitely catch our next few podcasts on that, and then we'll get back into some recruiting and some other stuff. Also, some interviews with former players before too long. Should be fun over the course of the rest of the offseason. Stick with us. I'm Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio, a Vsporto channel. Thanks for listening. I made this.